This is the Day Zero update for June 7th, 2020. I'm Filippo Dinolfo.
I'm Patrick Mifflin.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
And I'm Dandra Victoria.
And it's been a week.
Yeah.
To put it one way, it's kind of terrifying and saddening to see the state of affairs. And on the other hand, one, it was inevitable that things were going to get like this. And two, we're starting to see a lot of people who normally wouldn't have been invested in this kind of stuff getting invested.
Mm-hmm.
And when you get people who wouldn't normally care starting to care, that's when you start to get actual real change happening. I mention this because I don't know about you guys, but if you like go over to twitch.tv every now and then, you see a bunch of people playing games. That's kind of what Twitch does.
Yeah.
But apart from the like streams that were specifically covering like particular esports online events, every single streamer that I saw was talking about this.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a cultural shift happening. And I think it's going to end up being positive in the long run, but it's kind of still a painful process to go through. Let's be real.
Yeah, it is. Mm-hmm. But anybody who's been listening to what we've been saying both on this show and on on Let's Weekend knew that this was only a matter of time. It's just we didn't really realize what the catalyst was going to be.
Yeah.
And the catalyst ended up igniting something that ended up spreading all over the world.
Yeah. So, yeah. Hopefully we'll start to see some positive change happen.
Yeah. Because for the record, Phil, of course, is in Canada, and they've been having their own series of protests as well.
Yeah.
In pretty much every major city in the country.
Yeah. Montreal, Toronto, Vancouver, you know, Winnipeg. So, yeah.
Because Canada also has its own history of racial discrimination, especially when it comes to the native population.
Yeah.
So
you know, it's all coming out into the open now. That's that's how you start dealing with it, is to first acknowledge it.
Yep.
Yeah.
Whether or not the powers that be will acknowledge it, we'll see. They'll probably end up going kicking and screaming, but they'll end up going.
One yeah. way or the other. And it'll just be our job to drag them there.
Yeah. So, but you know, I don't want to dwell too much on that because, well, that's what we have Let's Weekend for. But it was worth mentioning, at least at the top of the show.
Yeah. Because it ended up affecting much of the gaming world as well.
Yeah, it kind of did. And we'll talk.
Well, I mean, this is normally the busiest news cycle in the year.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And we were expecting to have a lot of announcements to go over this week, and we have approximately none. So we'll get to that. But before we do, we'll talk about what we've been playing this week, because apart from following the state of current events, we've probably been doing stuff to distract ourselves a little bit. And for me, well, I'm still doing PC Building Simulator. They dropped an update, I think, last week. Mm-hmm. Yeah, added a new workshop to play around in, which is fun. I keep bumping into the giant liquid nitrogen tank in the middle of the workshop, which... Okay, I should remember that it's there every now and then, but there's those there. And then there's the liquid nitrogen pots that are next to the toaster for some reason. Yeah, mm-hmm. it's an interesting place to be. Nice workshop, the Overclockers UK DLC. It's out. I'm expecting that maybe they'll do some more of that. Workshops themed after, that one is a particular. They're a system builder, so maybe they'll do stuff like, not Dell. Nobody wants a Dell workshop. Yeah, but they might do Jace Two Cents or Gamers Nexus or whoever, one of the bigger tech YouTubers that are particularly interesting. Apart from that, I'm still playing Streets of Rage 4. I still really love that game. that lifetime score is just still constantly going up. And yeah, it's still a fun game.
Gives you something that you're constantly invested in.
Yeah, yeah. So it's a good deal of fun. I'm still waiting for the my physical version to ship, so I'm guessing that'll probably be, well, maybe the end of this month, if all goes well. I'm also pondering, I noticed limited run games have Blaster Master Zero and Blaster Master Zero 2 physical editions available now, so
yes.
Interesting. But I might just go to PSN and just get those, because I want to play them, but like, now, and not in 3 months. Yeah. So, there's that.
That's good stuff.
Yeah, I haven't, like, it was on the Switch for a while, and then it kind of moved to the PC for a little bit, and then ended up on PS4, so I think that's probably where I'm going to end up playing it. Apparently, they're pretty solid, the both of them, so.
Mm-hmm.
I've not had a chance to check them out yet. And apart from that, well, I finally got a MAME full set, and I imported that into Launchbox. That took a while. interestingly, though, Launchbox does a pretty interesting thing as far as the way it imports, is that you can kind of selectively decide what you want to bring in. Because first of all, you can tend to focus your imports around like what region games to bring in. So if you're a fan of Japanese games, you could choose your region as Japan, or if you want to see North American sets only, but primarily, you can do that. Or if you like the world sets or Europe, you can do those. And then you have like a bunch of categories that you could pick from. It's like, well, okay, I don't want to see slot machine games. I don't want to see casino games. I don't want to see tabletop or, you know, rhythm games, stuff like that. You can decide which ones you want and which ones you don't. Another thing that it does is it creates playlists for stuff like, you know, CPS1, CPS2, CPS3, and Capcom Classics, and Neo Geo.
Cool.
And, yeah, it's kind of organizes stuff really nicely. Got playlists for genres, so if you want, like, you know, see the arcade racers that are available in MAME, you can just choose that playlist and see all those.
How's that list looking these days?
It's pretty substantial. Right? It goes everything from Monaco GP up to Daytona 2. Daytona 2 doesn't run very well, but it's in there. I would need Supermodel to run that properly. For some reason, MAME's support of Model 3 is not that great.
Weird.
But Supermodel is a lot better. Yeah. But it's just because, you know, MAME is a general emulator. Their main focus is to just get things running, and eventually they'll get things running well, but it's mostly like, well, it's just...
But the running part is the priority.
Yeah, so where I'm at. I mean, so once I got that in there, I just played a bunch of Neo Geo. So, as you do.
As you do.
So that's kind of been it for me. So how about you, Pat?
Somehow I just found my way to Final Fantasy XII this week. Timely game, I would say. Final Fantasy XIV retroactively makes it a very good game, a lot better than I found it to be when it first came out, just because there are a lot of things in Final Fantasy XIV that directly tie into the events of XII. And you're basically, I'm not going to say that they take place in the same world, but there's definitely enough proximity there to suggest that you're seeing at least an alternate version of events playing out in 14. And yeah, that just going through and I could say this for a few Final Fantasy games that may not have hit me the same way because I'd already played through them before 14 even came out. But I'm going back and playing through 12 now and just developing a new understanding where all of these elements of 14 came from. And that in and of itself has been a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And so, what?
I was like, was wondering what version you're playing.
Zodiac Age PS4.
Okay.
I 14 has given me a very new appreciation of 12. And I'm not going to say necessarily it's made 12 one of my favorite games in the series, but I definitely understand it a lot more and enjoy it a lot more because of 14. Mm. And even when I'm playing it, I feel like I'm playing a more laid-back version of 14.
Yeah.
which it kind of is. So, yeah. But that's really been it for me. But I've been plowing through this game. I passed the 40-hour mark this morning, and not really an end in sight. I thought I was in a final dungeon because there were status effects all over the place and behemoths everywhere. It wasn't the final dungeon, so I don't know where it's going now. Hmm. So that's been it for me.
All right. As for me, I'm still playing Shinest the Lightning Kingdom, and it's probably going to be the main game I'm going to be playing until the 19th when, you know, The Last of Us Part 2 comes out, in which case I will be knee-deep in that one. And I can't wait. Yeah. One of those games I've been waiting on for a few years now. So having gone back and playing Shinest now, for those who don't know, Shinest is actually one of those games that was like among the first generation of like successful Kickstarter games. But unfortunately it came out in 2017, and it's definitely got like the guts of a good game, and it's definitely got like great art direction, and the story's good and everything, and the universe and the world building. And the gameplay isn't too bad, necessarily too bad either, but it's definitely one of those games that shows that, you know, you can't release a game without going in and doing some serious fine-tuning on things here and there, because there are definitely some parts here that shows that, you know, they needed to go back and tighten up a few things. You know, like hit detection is one of them. I said hit detection, more like it's one of those games where if you accidentally jump on a space that you're technically not supposed to be able to stand on, you'll kind of get stuck in the falling animation until you get off of it.
Oh.
Oof. Yeah. Yeah. Also, occasionally it's like design for like overworld design is a little too over complicated. You do get like a map that you get for pretty much every area in the game, and that's fine. Unfortunately, when it comes to like trying to track down your like where your next objective is, the game kind of doesn't do a very good job of letting you know like on what floor it is, because a lot of these places have like multiple levels to them. And sometimes you'll go to an area only to find out that you actually have to go to like level, you know, you actually have to go to like the second or third floor or something like that. You know, just stuff like that, basically. It's one of those, you know, and also, like, especially when it comes to, like, the character models. The character models aren't necessarily bad, but, like, the way the light hits them when they're, you know, at a certain angle is very awkward looking. You know, because the graphics are all cel-shaded. And that's fine, but the problem with cel-shading is that if the lighting is off, it looks really wonky.
Yeah.
And Shinest definitely suffers from that issue. And as for like the actual gameplay, it's essentially, you know, an action RPG type thing. And as far as like the fight is concerned, it's all like based around like, you know, one-on-one, you know, martial arts fighting, which is fine. And it's actually not bad at all. It's actually pretty intuitive, and you can do a lot of like combos and stuff, but the problem is sometimes the action happens so fast that you'll end up getting completely overwhelmed like really fast. And this is especially can be a problem when you're in a fight and like one of your party members is the one that you need in this fight, but before the fight happens and the save point, you know, activates itself, you're now at the point where you can't actually like go back and change them now.
Oof.
Yeah.
Well, that's just bad design.
Yeah. Other than that, I pretty enjoy it. So.
Yeah, it sounds like the kind of game that it would be pretty enjoyable, and you just kind of have to overlook some of the rough edges.
It reminds me of some of the really the old sort of B tier PlayStation and PS2 games that I used to really love.
Yeah.
It's very much like that.
Yeah. The only problem is, as you said, this came out in 2017, so expectations are a little bit higher than that. So.
Yeah, and also, like I said, it was among the first generation of Kickstarter success stories, so...
There was some delay, too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, if you got a PS Now, you can actually... You can go and get it and download the whole game and play it for yourself, so... You know, give it a shot if you're interested. I will go ahead and tell you, probably the first hour is the slowest going, but it really picks up after that. But also, I went on a GOG and I got me a copy of the side-scrolling brawler slash action game called Tonight We Riot.
How is that anyway?
It's a... Basically, you play a worker who has collectivized their working place, and so you've decided you're going to go from city to city, liberating various working places and collectivizing them, and slowly, pushing the capitalist scum out of the city. And basically, how it operates is you are an individual, and as the game goes on, you end up collecting all these other workers who join you as you keep going, and you're essentially acting as a group, and you end up going up against first groups of riot police, and then they originally show up with shields and batons, and eventually they show up with rubber bullet guns, and then trucks with tear gas and water cannons, and then eventually tanks start showing up and giant robots and. Yeah, it's that kind of game. But as for actual combat, by yourself, you can, as far as I've gotten right now, your main weapons against the people you're fighting it is just your regular fists or Molotov cocktails or bricks. And, depending, as you go along, you end up collecting more and more people to join the movement. So you've got a huge crowd following you. And when you attack, they also attack at the same time. And if you can, the way you can control them is you can kind of move them around like a sentient blob, and they will, you get them up next to riot police or whatever, and they will start beating the crap out of them. It's both really tongue in cheek and also dead serious.
Kind of sounds like a more violent Pikmin.
At the same time, it is.
Yeah.
It absolutely is. I definitely recommend it. if anything else, but for the pure catharsis factor.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah, definitely. Speaking of timely games.
Mm-hmm. All right. Dan Reb, what about you?
Yeah, I've had a bit of a rough week, being an Asian American living in California with all this stuff going on. It's not easy, especially being a community manager for a mobile gaming company. It's follow this and that, and you have other opinions and whatnot, so it's been rough. So my gaming has really just been me going through the various motions. The game that I have the most comfort playing is, of course, going to be Animal Crossing. This month is the it's wedding season, so basically what we do here is you take the plane over to Harv's Island, and Harv's Island is basically just this place where you can set up a house with basically unlimited furniture and, for lack of a better thing, just create memes. It's personally not my favorite part of the game, and it's not really that popular in the community either. But with this particular event, it's pretty cool because what you're doing is you're setting up wedding photos for this couple in the series, Reese and Cyrus. Mm-hmm. And as you'd imagine, it's the internet. So, they want you to pretty much decorate a chapel or decorate their wedding reception. But with all the items there are in the game, people are not doing that. They're creating magma fields. They're putting them in jail. They're setting up weird voyeurism situations. And yeah, it's I'm pretty sure it's not what Nintendo initially wanted, but they also knew that this was going to happen going in. And as a result, you get a new form of currency that you can use to exchange for various wedding items, which are pretty cool for the design part of the game. And yeah, that's been pretty fun. Last night, I tried to jump back into Dragon Ball Z Kakarot. And I mentioned last week that I'm currently in the Nappa Vegeta saga. And Goku's back fighting Vegeta, and I can't beat him. So I don't know whether I'm supposed to grind before then, but I did notice that Goku comes back at level 17 and you're fighting a level 20 Vegeta. And I'm like, okay, I probably do have to grind, which is pretty stupid because there aren't a whole lot of enemies that are really worth your time. And if you decide to grind, it'll probably take longer than you probably think. So that's not fun. So I stopped playing that for a little bit. And then I just scrolled through my PSN and Switch offerings and Xbox Live Arcade, and I was like, I don't really want to play anything right now. So I popped in Full Throttle, and that's been pretty chill. But, you know, it's I'm just going through the motions until June 19th when Last of Us 2 comes out. I might even play the original Last of Us. I don't know. But as far as gaming goes, that's about it.
Alrighty. So, yeah, kind of a slow week for most of us, but anyways. So, yeah, we're waiting on Chris, and he should be here once he gets back from work in a few minutes. In the meantime, I guess we'll get on with our discussion topic of the week. And that's ideal E3 announcements if E3 was still happening. Because it isn't. So, yeah, I guess I'll turn this one over to Pat to start us off while we all get our thoughts together.
Yeah, I really went all out with this one. So last year I just kind of had the idealized Project Gotham Racing 5 trailer for an Xbox conference. This time I'm idealizing the Final Fantasy section of a Square Enix conference. And so I see them opening up with a franchise-spanning video celebrating every game in the series. Maybe show a nice 35th anniversary logo for 2022, because that's coming up soon. And that will be relevant to certain announcements that I'm going to be talking about later on in the show. But obviously, the first trailer that we're going to be opening up with is Final Fantasy VII, The Unknown Journey. And obviously, the follow-up to Final Fantasy VII Remake. Kind of just jumping on right where that game left off. And
yeah, because remind me, at this point in like the original Final Fantasy VII, you know, you've left Midgar. What is the first thing that you usually end up doing?
Going to Calm.
Yeah, because I think at that point, once the, you know, Final Fantasy VII, the Unknown Remake, the Unknown Journey, that part of the game, it would basically, that would be when you actually get up into, like, the actual overworld.
Yes. That is the instant you get up into the original overworld, and, yeah, Calm is just due southeast of Midgar.
Yep. Yeah, and I'm just like, can you imagine what, like, that game's version of the Golden Saucer is going to be like?
Well, we have it in 14, so yes.
Yeah, that's why we're going to be that.
Yeah, but I mean, based more on the actual Golden Saucer in Final Fantasy VII.
Yeah, I think it'll be a lot like the one in 14.
Okay.
Because the one in 14 is really true to the one in 7.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah, they can kind of tip their hand as to what the Unknown Journey is going to entail, because I think I would think by an E3 that would happen this year, obviously, we would, you know, culturally speaking, from a gaming standpoint, we'd pretty much know what was going on with it, so they could openly show a trailer. And I think that the target release date for something like this would be holiday 2021. And so that would be a really strong way to open up the presser. And then you have Yosuke Matsuda come out for a segment, and he'll introduce Naoki Yoshida as the Final Fantasy brand manager, which is the first one that they've had since Hironobu Sakaguchi left.
Mm-hmm.
The idea here is to emphasize the importance of a consistent team at the helm of the franchise. Actual development teams might rotate a little bit on a game-by-game basis because there are going to be multiple projects in the works at any given time, but the main creative minds overseeing each project would remain constant. And so the idea here would be to go back to the idea of the franchise returning to the state of being a singular, consistent thought. It would be wrong to imply we're doing this so that we can keep making Final Fantasy VI forever, because that's not what they're trying to do here. But you can draw direct connections from 1 to 2 to 3 to 4 all the way up through 10. And by no means are these all the same game, but they are grounded in a singular thought. And once you started seeing substantial turnover from one game to the next, that consistency went away just as quickly. And this idea would be to fix that. So the focus would also be shifting from developing individual titles piecemeal to managing Final Fantasy as an overarching expanding brand. Every Final Fantasy has created fans of the broader series. The hope would be that in the coming years, no matter which game made you a fan or which one you really latched on to, that they would be able to give you something to take you back to where your own personal Final Fantasy journey began. And they would make a point of saying, we're targeting 2022, the 35th anniversary, as the year that this particular collective truly puts its stamp on the franchise, and to give you a much better idea of what to expect from them moving forward. And so for this brain trust, I have people in specific roles, but they would all collectively hold the title of, you know, of a core franchise overseer. Naoki Yoshida, Tetsuya Nomura, Nigoro, Hiroyuki Ito, Yasumi Matsuno, Masayoshi Soken, Natsuko Ishikawa, Bon Ryota, and Yoshinori Kitase. And these guys would all be signed to long-term deals, basically holding them in that role, you know, for...
at least 10 years.
At least 10 years, yeah. If not longer, depending on how it works out. And so they would go from that and just introducing these 9 people as the new central team to the next trailer, Final Fantasy XIV Paragons, which would be looking at a July 2021 release. I'm not sure if they're going to have caught up to their usual release cycle by then with everything that's happened, but that's when the next expansion would drop. And I am using the word Paragons as the title for a reason, but I'm not saying that, you know, the title could still be anything at this point. And they would announce that this is Naoki Yoshida's final release directly over Final Fantasy XIV, with Nobuaki Komoto taking over for the 7.0 cycle. And then announced that Final Fantasy XIV will indeed be moving to the PS5 as of 6.0. But apart from that, don't say anything else. Just show the initial incomplete 3 to 3.5 minute initial reveal trailer and leave the rest for later. And so that's kind of in the rear view. Now we can make kind of a bid announcement. Final Fantasy Dimensions coming to all of the things August 2020. This is just kind of unfinished business, a console PC port of that mobile classic that has, you know, not gotten off of phones and tablets yet, and by all means should. So I think that would be a good indicator of where they'd be going with things moving forward, because Dimensions is absolutely a classic Final Fantasy right there in the vein of the Super NES years, and would not have been the least bit out of place on the Super NES. And so now we can start with my parade of 12-month violations, because I did mention that the 35th anniversary would be a focal point. So we'll start off with kind of an unexpected remake, but one that I can really see them doing because the game was terrible, but the concept deserved a lot better. Mm-hmm. So a full from scratch remake of Final Fantasy II. And I don't mean remake in the Final Fantasy VII remake sense. I mean, just making Final Fantasy II for modern platforms with classic gameplay and everything that just didn't work out in that original release stripped out and replaced.
And localized, naturally, because that never happened here.
Well, no, it did. Final Fantasy Origins had it. Dawn of Souls had it on the Game Boy Advance. There was a standalone release on the PSP.
Mm-hmm.
But just selected in acknowledgement that it is regarded as the least approachable game in the series and probably the least representative game of those early Final Fantasies. So I think spring 2022 would be a good timetable for it and a good opportunity for them to retell a Final Fantasy story from the 80s that really kind of the game got in the way of it. So maybe a do-over would really particularly do that game some good. And I can see them really putting a lot of effort into getting it right.
Mm-hmm.
So spring 2022 for that. Moving on to summer 2022, Final Fantasy X-3. Mm. All of the things. Mm. They cannot let this story go unfinished. Reunite as much of the original Final Fantasy X team as possible under the new committee. Obviously, wouldn't be able to show much at this point because it would probably just be a confirmation announcement here, but also mention that there will be a complete edition for those who haven't played the originals that includes the 10 and 10.2 HD remaster.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of fans who would chomp at the bit for this announcement, and for some of them, it would even be the highlight of the show.
Yeah.
So I really feel like that would be an important place for them to go in terms of revitalizing the brand and sort of taking care of it as an ongoing masterpiece. And then we bring out Yoshida again.
Oh,
and you mentioned the concept art that he teased last year pertaining to a new next gen project. And this is where you point out that unifying Final Fantasy isn't just about the brand's past. It is absolutely about the future. Cut to a trailer. And you just see a lot of really classic Final Fantasy imagery, but fully modernized, fully like the kind of imagery you would expect from Final Fantasy 4 or 5 or 6, but really brought up to the level of ninth gen platforms. And eventually when they cut to a scene of a snow-capped mountain region, it slowly zooms in and you can kind of see four adventurers carving their way through the local flora and fauna trying to clear themselves a path to the summit. And once they get there, you hear one of them say, "Finally. It feels like it's been forever, but I think we're finally home." And that right as that moment, the series main theme plays.
Mm-hmm.
We get our first look at the Final Fantasy 16 logo.
Mm-hmm.
And it zooms out, and off in the distance, you can see that castle that was in the concept art.
Mm-hmm.
And so it immediately cuts to a battle scene that shows the characters actively walking around, kind of like it's Final Fantasy 12. And the battle theme is quickly recognizable as one of Soken's bangers. Like, you know you're going to be getting a good soundtrack here.
Mm.
But then you quickly realize that the timers are proper ATB gauges, and combat is stopping for menu navigation whenever a party member gets a turn. And then it just says, introducing ATB 3.0, Final Fantasy returns to its pen and paper roots. And it's still super active. It's still really fast-paced, and it has great flow to it. But it gives you a chance to issue individual commands to individual team members every turn. It is positional in nature, and it shows character behavior between turns, kind of determined by assigned presets. So where formations in old school Final Fantasy games kind of just meant you determined who was on the front line and who would be picking up the back. Now it determines behavior like do your party members bunch up to try and defend it collectively against enemies, or do they want to spread out because they're maybe you've got magicians that you're fighting against that are dropping AoEs on you, things like that. And you can do that all through the formation menu. But it can also be changed on the fly. But the idea here is that we're kind of hybridizing the ATB system, keeping the positional elements that 2.0 introduced in Chrono Trigger, and now we kind of want to add some extra flow to it and some environmental factors and things like that. And then just the entire... The last point they make is that the entire game, through its development philosophy to its storyline, just has this overarching theme of coming home from a long journey. And that would just kind of be the final thought that that they leave you on. And that is my idealized Square Enix Final Fantasy segment.
Well, I got the talent in place to do it.
Oh, yeah.
There's no doubt about it. It's just the will. That's what we're...
Yeah.
we're still a bit curious on. Because that ATB 3 system that you're proposing sounds pretty much exactly like what I want.
Yeah.
Setting-wise, I think that, 4-6 type of setting, I guess the steampunk was okay as far as the Magitek and whatever. I think it's when Final Fantasy started getting all modern is kind of when it kind of went off the rails for me.
That was Nomura.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So you keep Nomura in the character design role and let Nigoro handle, the setting, let Matsuno handle the setting. I think that that Nomura's liabilities could be overcome.
Because by everything that I've been seeing from 14, it looks like they're trying to lean heavily into that. So
yeah. So you take the driving minds behind that and put them at the helm of the entire franchise, I think you'd be in a very good place.
Yeah, it'd be a good return to form. Oh, yeah.
And you'll notice if you go over the list of people that I mentioned, it is overwhelmingly 14 and 12.
Yeah. So, all right, so before we move on, hey, Chris, he's here. He just joined us. Yeah.
Yeah, fuck construction on the roads.
Ooh.
They literally closed the exit that I use. And don't put the sign that it's closed until after the exit before.
Oh, so you're stuck. And they
can't get so it. I'm like, oh, I got to go to this completely different route.
Hmm.
Adds like an extra 10, 15 minutes.
Yeah. So, all right, so I'll give you time to think about your idealized E3 announcements while I kind of go over my own.
All right.
So my first one, first and only, really, and it would kind of be from Microsoft, and it's kind of taking off on what they've been announcing lately with the backwards compatibility. Because to me, it seems like they're spending an awful lot of time engineering the Series X's backwards compatibility, And if they're doing that, it seems to imply that there's going to be more to it than just playing a limited catalog of original Xbox and Xbox 360 titles.
Well, it kind of has to.
Yeah. Because, like I said, they're putting a lot of effort into adding stuff like, you know, being able to uncap the frame rate in certain cases.
That is no mean feat.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That is, you know, because on some cases, if you do that, it kind of messes up the whole timing of the game.
Yeah.
You know, adding stuff like automatic HDR, you know. So if you're going through that effort, it seems to me like, why would you want to do that for just a selection of original Xbox games that may or may not really benefit from it? So I'm imagining, like, probably Phil Spencer saying, you know, we made a commitment to backwards compatibility, and we're going to stand by it. Here's how it works. And you see a trailer show up with an Xbox Series X next to a TV, because it can't be under the TV, because it's too big.
That's not going to be good for the Xbox.
Yeah. And then it pans over to a shelf of Xbox 360 and Xbox games, and you got this, you know, 30-something guy walking over and picking up a copy of, you know, Project Gotham Racing 2 and walking over to it, his Xbox Series X, putting the disc in, and then the flubber animation for Xbox shows up.
Flubber?
Yeah. Well, that's what people call it. So there's... And just playing stuff directly off the disc. Or at worst, you know, installing it and getting the benefits there. Because you are going to need to do some modification to those files, obviously.
Yeah.
So there would be that. But then I'm imagining them going one step further. And it goes over to that shelf again. And it pans downwards a little bit. And you see a shelf of Dreamcast jewel cases.
Ooh.
And he picks up one of those and throws it in his Xbox Series X, and then it plays.
Mm-hmm.
Because there have been rumors that...
For a long time.
Yeah, that Sega and Microsoft were working together. A lot of people want a Dreamcast 2. We're not going to get it. But adding Dreamcast support to an Xbox Series X, which is more than capable of running it, wouldn't be too outside the realm of possibility.
It's true.
So, yeah, for me, that's going to be my idealized, idealized E3 announcement, a renewal of backwards compatibility. And if they wanted to blow people's minds, well, then they could just show the dude.
Having throw a copy of Sonic Adventure.
That, or, you know, picking up a copy of Panzer Dragoon Saga and putting that in.
Oh.
Yeah.
Get Saturn in there, too?
Yeah.
I like it.
That would, so that would make the Xbox Series X the most backwards compatible console ever.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's how I
count me in.
Yeah. So whoever wants to go next, Brandon?
I will.
Yeah.
I'll go.
Go.
So my idealized E3 announcements would basically come from a couple of my pet developers, I guess you could say. First would be BioWare. Ideally would be showing what they're planning for Anthem 2.0 to basically fix the less than perfect launch of the base game. Showing that, amongst other things, there's a more well-rounded and more involved campaign. There's more single-player content that doesn't require you to go off with a bunch of strangers. They fix the fine tuning on the suits, so you're not constantly having to deal with, you know, recharging your jets and everything. That's sort of part of it. But from BioWare, there's basically two things I really want to see. The first is the new Dragon Age, which we know for a fact they've been working on for the last couple years, and, you know, it's about time to show something. And I want to, you know, I just want to see that.
Yeah, EA's given them time, and that is not like EA.
No. After what happened with Anthem, EA kind of realized, might be a good idea to sort of back off a little bit and let these people do what they do, and not, you know, poking our asses into it. So there are two other things I'd really love to see from BioWare. The first is, at least for this year, the first is a Mass Effect trilogy remaster, which they could totally do.
And it's in the rumor mill.
Yeah. Basically, what I would want is for them to go back and sort of, you know, update some of the graphics, sort of clean it up, sort of, you know, stream, you know, not so much stream, but sort of fix some of the more awkward animations that, you know, looked, looked great, you know, in the Xbox 360 and PS3 era, but in this era now they look pretty rather stiff. Maybe go and fix some graphical issues, update some graphical points, as far as like, a couple of things, as far as like anatomy is concerned. Being inspired by what happened with, the definitive edition of Xenoblade Chronicles, with this remaster, they would include, of course, all of the DLC, but they would also include a new sort of mini epilogue that ideally, like a mini epilogue campaign that ideally would lead into whatever the next Mass Effect game is. So, like, it'll sort of be more definitively, you know, talk about what happened to Commander Shepard and, you know, sort of reunite most of the original base crew. Garrus and Tali and Liara and Ashley and all those people. And then I would like to see a possible remaster of Jade Empire.
I'd be down with that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. That again would also have a small mini epilogue that would lead into Jade Empire 2. Because they've got a hell of a franchise here they could be using and they're just ignoring it. You know?
Yeah. Highly underrated game. I'm kind of surprised more people didn't play it. But
yeah. It was kind of I think it was like a late Xbox game.
Yeah.
And, you know, we were leading into the Xbox 360, and most people were just,
too stuck, you know, right, to notice.
Yeah. Because, again, Xbox 360, you know, Mass Effect also came out around that year, too. So it kind of stole a lot of Jade Empire's thunder.
Yeah.
Also, seeing from I want to see project from the people at Archetype Entertainment, because a lot of the old guard from BioWare have moved there to Archetype, including Drew Carpachine, and I want to see what projects they've been working on, if anything, that they can show us. See what else. From CD Projekt Red, it's probably not going to happen. It's probably the least possible example here, but I would like to be able to see a new game in the Witcher universe where it mostly revolves around what Ciri was doing between, you know, Witcher 2 and 3. You could actually you could mostly play Ciri yourself, or you could do a customized character. I'm fine with both. Let's see what else. From Naughty Dog, one of the things Naughty Dog's always has done for a long time is they have a tendency to sort of announce pre-announce what a lot of their next game projects are going to be by sort of making small references to them in previous franchises before they move on. So, like, for example, in the Jack and Daxter series, they had little references to what would eventually be Uncharted. And then in Uncharted 3, they had one or two references to what would eventually become The Last of Us. Mm-hmm. I would like them to take one of the things from The Last of Us and make that their new franchise, specifically that comic book series that Ellie is really obsessed with. I want that to be the next Naughty Dog game.
Hmm.
Is there anything else? That is, that's about all I can think of right now.
All right. Chris, hopefully you've had time to think about it.
Go ahead, Dan.
Yeah. All right. So I'll just, I didn't really have much prepared for the show, but I went ahead and did a rough outline for what I think, or what I would hope would be a Nintendo Direct presentation.
Mm-hmm.
So starts off with the red, the logo, the snap of the fingers, and then it shows some pan out views of a whole bunch of loop-de-loops. And Sega's logo. So you would think Sonic, but all of a sudden you hear the air guitar and it's Big Blue playing. So it ends up being F-Zero GX remastered for September 2020. So that'll go ahead and get the blood pumping from all the fans. And then after that, it's another trailer, or no, it's just someone from Nintendo talking, and all of a sudden they show Super Mario 3D World for the Switch.
Mm-hmm.
New World, and then at the end,
yes,
like they show Mario on a coin celebrating his 35th anniversary. Mm-hmm. So that's where they go ahead and talk about all the remasters for the Mario anniversary stuff. So I'm gonna go ahead and go out on a limb and say they announced Super Mario 3D All Stars 35th Anniversary Edition, mm-hmm, which includes Super Mario Sunshine, Super Mario Galaxy, and Super Mario Galaxy 2, all in the $60 package for October 2020. And then they show a bunch of Japanese guys from Universal Japan talking about Super Nintendo World, and then they waste a bit of time on that, and then they also officially announced that it's coming to Orlando with no planned date. Like, even though it's been known, it was never actually announced, and they go ahead and make the announcement here.
Hmm.
And then they stay casual, showing a bunch of like Wii-like graphics, and it's eventually Switch Sports Resort. So it's Wii Sports Resort just remastered on the Switch, because the Joy-Cons are apparently better than the Wii Motion Plus anyway. So that's that. Nothing new. Coming out in August, and it'll be at an MSRP of $50 rather than $60. And then this is where I go totally crazy. It's not going to happen at all. They show what looks like Breath of the Wild. It's a very anime-like open world. And then all of a sudden, they pan in on a cave. And all of a sudden, the cave is blocked by a big rock, and you see a big hand move the rock out of place. And it zooms out to show that it's Isaac from Golden Sun, not Link or any of that. And following in the footsteps of them talking about Xenoblade Chronicles 2 and Dragon Quest XI for an extremely long time, because don't get me wrong, I love Dragon Quest, but you don't need to spend 15 minutes talking about it. They do the same thing with Golden Sun for... And the only person excited about it is me and other Japanese RPG fans. And then, like, the rest of the Nintendo fans are already tuned out. So they pick up the momentum by doing a Smash announcement. Travis Touchdown will be a playable character as part of the DLC pass. And they also reiterate that No More Heroes 3 is coming in December. And they follow that up with a Bayonetta 3 trailer, because, you know, we've never seen her in a while. And then it comes out with Doug Bowser. He reiterates Nintendo's dedication to their fans, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, he wants to go ahead and put his mark on what they've done. So they end the presentation with Mother 3 on Switch, available now. Fuck you, Reggie. Not the fuck you, Reggie part, but that'll break the internet.
Yeah.
Wow.
That would break the internet. That actually would be a pretty damn solid Nintendo Direct.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then people will complain that there's no Zelda or Metroid. I have to be so optimistic there.
Yeah, well, I mean, they have to leave something for people to complain about.
Exactly.
Otherwise, what's the point? If you have everything, then you can't you can't strive for anything. So
Golden Sun 4, get hype.
I wonder why it is that Nintendo has been so reluctant to go back to that franchise. It almost seems like they just don't want to even acknowledge it exists.
Yeah, I mean, you can say that about a lot of other franchises, F-Zero included, and that's why I start to show with it.
Yeah. All right, so finally, Chris, what do you got?
I think one thing would be getting the train rolling for next gen is Polyphony announcing Gran Turismo 7. Doing the thing that people have been wanting. Because now they got their kind of pipeline going for Gran Turismo Sports. There's no real need to change much what they're doing to make it ready for the next gen. The car models look fantastic. It's just a matter of pumping in that content and getting a better head start on the framework for that than they had for Sport early on. And, of course, it'll come out in a few years anyway, so
yeah,
might as well announce it now and get people excited. Because that's the Polyphony experience, is get in there early and keep them waiting for a while.
Another part of the Polyphony experience has always been the prototype release. Pretty much done that for every GT game since the last few of them, actually. Except for, Sport even had a prototype come out. So.
One thing that I would really like to happen is getting a new Plants vs. Zombies made just for consoles and PC. None of this mobile shit, because they have they've kind of made it from a franchise that kind of anybody could play anywhere to it's only on mobile. That's all you get. You have to be adhering to the stuff that you expect on there as far as monetization and all that stuff. Make something that is more around the framework of the first game, but you know, charge $15-$20 whatever for it. Have a lot of the same stuff that's in those games, just none of the monetization tied to it that kind of breaks a lot of the progression to it. But that would be a big thing that would get me going. What else would there be? I think you could get Horizon Zero Dawn too. Get that going. It's been 4 years since they got that game out.
Yeah.
And I think they're ready to show what they've learned since then. Expand that game some more, get more open with it, especially with Aloy's abilities. Because, as you know, if you played it, you're kind of getting around the world is a mix of just basics of like The Witcher and like Elder Scrolls, where if you're trying to climb up mountains, you kind of often are just trying to figure out the geometry that she can stay on. So you're kind of jumping from, you know, point to point if you can't find a route that specifically lets you get up into these other areas. That kind of stuff. So it'd be a lot more freedom of movements, ability to climb up stuff more readily, and kind of let it be a little bit more freeform compared to what it is, and kind of just have a lot more kind of freedom of ways that you can attack different scenarios and missions. Because generally, right, with the game that is, it's kind of a lot of you either go stealthy or you go in, you know, setting up traps and that kind of stuff to lure the different creatures into it, or just going in, you know, bows blazing, that kind of thing, and kind of opening it up with more strategy to it and a lot of stuff like that that kind of lets you, which I already did a lot of that stuff, because you could go into your like radar mode and kind of see like, okay, this part is weak to this, but strong to this, that kind of stuff, and like, okay, I need to stick to these kind of arrows for this encounter, that kind of stuff, but kind of let it be a little bit more improvisational in the way you can do it. There's definitely a lot there, and especially just being in a in a world that's less constrained by, you know, data streaming issues, that can be real big as a big showcase of like what you can do with open world games next gen, with the kind of SSD tech that they have. I think that would be definitely a huge thing, and I think you can cap it off by showing what the special project that Housemarque is working on for them.
Mm-hmm.
So you know they're working on a next-gen game. And it's most likely to be with Sony.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it won't be an arcade game, but knowing those developers are very talented, and they'll have something interesting to show. Whatever it is, I suspect it's going to be some sort of shooter. That's what they like to do, but be more focused on, I don't know what to exactly expect out of them. The battle royale was definitely a bit surprising, especially seeing how they kind of fit some of their stylistic and mechanical expertise into what a battle royale was. It worked out pretty well, just not enough to get whatever funding they needed to actually make that a thing, beyond just the tests they were doing. So it'll be interesting to see what the next thing is for them.
Have we hit peak Battle Royale at this point?
I hope so.
I think we have.
We're getting there. We're in like a second or third phase of Battle Royale, with Warzone and Apex Legends kind of coming in there. But Fortnite is kind of just finding ways to evolve to the point that they just have like a social space now, which is where they host like the Travis Scott concert. Supposedly at some point, Christopher Nolan movie is going to air in there. So you just kind of hang out with friends and not necessarily have to do the Battle Royale stuff. And yeah, I've seen what that game is currently, and it's kind of wild. Not only have they like introduced a lot of the things that like Apex Legends and Warzone and have added, you know, like the ability to respawn back into the end of the fights, pinging stuff for your teammates, that kind of stuff. But they have ways of like upgrading your specific weapons that you have if you get the resources before you get to a specific point, that kind of stuff, rather than just having to hope for the luck of the drops.
Yeah.
For that, so they seem to have plenty of money, time, and resources to keep evolving, trying to find new things to do with that game. That still does pretty well. PUBG still putts along. as the
alternative,
the paid battle royale game that people play. That keeps finding its own things to do. So they just added bots into it, and people aren't happy about that, but I think it's the big issue with battle royales is the wait time to get the matches set up.
Yeah,
it could be, you know, a few minutes and easy ways to throw in bots.
Yeah.
Get like maybe half of what you would have, and bots would be the solution. You give the people that are on the lower end of the skill ceiling to satisfaction of killing stuff, even if it's brain dead AI. But that would make it easier for them to accomplish their like battle pass goals of like, you know, get X amount of kills with this gun. It's like your chances of actually getting kills or shots in a match, it can be few.
Yeah.
So, you know, it makes it more rewarding for the average person, but probably frustrating for the people on the higher ends.
Yeah. I mean, Fortnite's already doing that.
Yeah, that's the other thing I saw. I was like, oh, trying to figure out, oh, is this a bot or not? It's probably a bot because it's just
standard
breaking stuff. Just looking at this wall, breaking stuff, building it again, breaking it again. It's like, okay, sure, whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think those would be some cool announcements to see.
Yeah.
And things we could definitely see at the like the PS5 reveal.
Yeah. When that eventually gets re-announced. It's going to be another couple of... We'll see. All right, so let's get on to the rest of the news of the week. Not a whole hell of a lot of it, but we'll get to what we can. First of all, a big bundle over at itch.io. It's the game bundle for racial justice and equality. $5 gets you Over 700 games. Actually, I think it may be closer to 800 at this point.
It's 742 right now. I think they've got a couple hundred more that they're looking to add into it at some point. You have to pay extra for that.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's selling really well. Their current goal is 2 million. They're at 1.9 right now, so almost there to breaking that current goal.
Yeah.
Yeah, like the average contribution is $11.62. So people are going a bit above that, with the top one being $5,000. So you can kind of put whatever you want, at least $5. Mm-hmm. They've got 165,000 purchases.
Yeah.
Which is a lot. And because it's itch.io, it's got a good mix of legit noteworthy indie games, a lot of smaller stuff from smaller devs, like hobby games, and a lot of like asset packs for people that want to make games, as well as just other odds and ends, like this thing called Desktop Goose.
Yeah.
Which is a thing you can run that just has this annoying little goose that just runs around your desktop. Will leave like mud prints around because he's a messy asshole. Will steal your mouse cursor, run away with it, which you can have this thing on while you're playing games. As they show in the YouTube video, like somebody's trying to play Call of Duty and all of a sudden it just takes it and they're just spinning constantly because it's in the top left corner of the screen. That kind of thing. So it's very much a good troll kind of thing. And it's also able to pull messages onto the screen for you as well, like memes or whatever. So there's a lot of cool stuff in there. A lot of legit indie games that people should definitely check out if they have not, like Oxenfree, Night in the Woods. What else was I looking at?
Hold on a second. In there.
Just looking because I installed a bunch of stuff after I grabbed this. There's Quadrilateral Cowboy, Overland, Loot Rascals, Minutes, Astrologaster, Short Hike, some stuff Brandon would probably like called Tonight We Riot, which is a described as
look
a
up at the what we're playing.
It's described as like a leftist game.
Totally is.
Where a dystopia where wealthy capitalists control elections, media, and the lives of working people. There's another game called Democratic Socialist Simulator, which I have not played yet to see if that's a joking thing or not. There's a lot of stuff in this thing that's definitely worth checking out for people that want to support a good cause. I think it's going towards the NAACP Legal Defense and Education Fund and Community Bail Fund, split 50-50between those. And yeah, no Steam keys, but if you have the itch.io launcher, you can kind of... the only problem really is that they don't just add it all to that library on there. You have to specifically click on the list for each game. So you can kind of curate things a little bit if you want. I think their launcher is kind of very bare bones, which is kind of the itch.io thing, I guess.
Yeah.
So it's kind of bare bones. Let's let you kind of get to things how you want. But it's maybe as user friendly as like Steam is at this point. But yeah.
Something at least. I mean, a lot of value in there, and it's for a good cause. I do like that all of these developers are like, yeah, this is we'll give up our stuff for a really good cause. Yeah, we're into that.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So cool stuff. Go check that out. It's going to run for the next. It looks like for the next 8 days. So yeah, you have some time while you're hearing this to go over to the link and get yourself $5.
Or they're already really close to their $2 million goal.
Yeah, we'll probably hit it by tomorrow.
Yeah. Yep.
Alrighty, so let's get on to delays. Yeah, we were going to cover the Sony PS5 reveal. Now we're not, because it didn't happen. So I guess we're covering it still, because it didn't happen. So that's going to be rescheduled to a time in the future.
Yeah.
Not entirely.
But for good reason.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they didn't say a particular date, So, you know, when we know, you'll know.
Mm-hmm.
Valve has delayed their Summer Steam Games Festival, obviously for a good reason, to the 19th of June. So that's going to be pushed off a week. Okay. I guess if you wanted to see a bunch of Steam games and, you know, it's basically their summer sale, let's be honest. So that's going to be delayed. EA has delayed their EA Play event, which is going to happen this week. They delayed it another week.
Yeah.
So.
Though in place of that, they've put a bunch of their games up on Steam.
Yeah. But I think it was going to happen anyway. But,
yeah.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, I think they're on sale. Some of them are.
A few of them are, yeah. And they have
people are, like, freaking out. It's weird seeing people are freaking out, like, oh, God, it's the you know, like, I don't know. My brain's turned to mush.
Yeah.
But, like, oh, it's this game that's 6 years old. It's like, all right, I guess, yeah, Steam people are hungry for these.
Yeah.
I was trying to look at the top sellers here.
Mm-hmm. For any surprise announcements, I don't even know why EA Play is even a thing. Like, what are people wanting?
That's true.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. The number three game top selling right now is Need for Speed Heat for $28.
Mm. Mm. Which is a pretty, you know, steep discount considering it came out this. No, it was last year at the end of last year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With the MSRP of $69.99.
Yeah. So right. That's already a pretty big discount. Yeah.
Well,
there's a bunch of people who have been waiting for it to just show up on Steam because they don't like Origin, and then of course, you're going to need to install Origin anyway, so I don't know why.
Yeah. It'd be nice if they had a way to bring your Origin library to Steam, like in the way a lot of older EA games came with keys that you could install, you could redeem on Origin to get them on Origin for free.
Mm.
Yep.
But yeah, they're not going to I don't think there's an easy way to do that in the reverse way.
Yeah.
But yeah, like Command & Conquer Remastered Collection is number one, Crysis 3 is number two, which, sure, I guess that's the thing you could buy. Crysis 3, but Need for Speed Heat, Unravels 5, Sea of Solitude is 6, Dragon Age Inquisition 7, Mirror's Edge Catalyst is 8. It's like, all right, EA, you've owned everything.
Yeah, there are a lot of people buying EA games on Steam now for some reason.
But yeah.
Okay. Well, they got Command & Conquer Remastered coming out later this year, so I'm guessing that's why the Command & Conquer collection is pretty popular.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, which is weird because I saw that
because it's fucking Command & Conquer.
Hmm. Yeah, I saw the FMV from that stuff. They could not use the PC FMV because it was like a worse codec for that.
Yeah.
So they had to pull it from the PS1 version.
Yeah, which has that was like a video.
Yeah. It's like, all right, that's a very weird thing.
Yeah, well, I
guess. Just the irony of having to use the console ports of a PC game to make a PC remaster much better.
Yeah. And then they're having to upscale that, so there's you know, video artifacts and stuff. But,
yeah, they had to go like find old tapes. And it's like, oh, this tape, we don't know what's on this because it's a format we don't have anymore access to, so they sent it off to the one company that could remaster that to 4K, and they found out, oh, this is just the same thing that's on the PC disc.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's not the master's
version,
so it's like, all right, you got a lot of work you got to go through and waste a little bit of money to find out what's going on, but it's also what happens when you try to remaster 30-year-old games.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Especially when you don't bother keeping the source materials. So
yeah.
Yeah. Great job, guys. So there's that. And probably also mentioned that EA Access is going to be available through Steam as well. So there you go, if you want to get that.
Yeah.
And our last delay, the North American Final Fantasy XIV Fan Fest was canceled. Indefinitely, I guess. The upcoming 5.3 patch was supposed to drop in the next couple of weeks. It's been pushed out till July.
Yeah, that's due to a lot of the staff working remotely. Slowed down the development of the patch. And this was going to be a pretty big patch, too, because they're taking pretty much the entire storyline of 2.0 and streamlining it. So I don't know exactly how that's going to work, but... in addition to all of the story-related stuff and all the new content they're adding with 5.3, they're also doing that, so I can understand that taking a little bit longer. As far as the fan fest goes, that's kind of a surprise because those are usually later in the year anyway. But I can see them playing it safe and probably moving all of the fan fest stuff to
streaming
to next year as we get ready for 6.0. Well,
that's where we are at with Final Fantasy 14 currently. And okay, so we'll move on to Call of Duty. We don't usually talk about Call of Duty.
No.
But when they do something kind of right, then we should mention it.
Yes.
So they have added to their loading screens, at the very least, some Black Lives Matter messaging. Given that this is coming from the same company that didn't want to piss off the Chinese, this is kind of surprising.
Mm-hmm.
But I suspect that the folks at Infinity Ward probably went and did this on their own and didn't really give a fuck about what Activision was saying because they're big enough to be able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So if you look at the link, you'll see what the message is. Given that this is a game that, well, let's be real here, a lot of...
It doesn't attract the internet's best and brightest.
No.
Nope.
So now it's right in their face. And you can imagine what the reaction to this is in some circles.
Yes.
And it's glorious. And, so congratulations to Infinity Ward for, stepping up. Hopefully they're sincere in this, and they're going to be taking the time, as I said, to go through and purge the system of those racist usernames, because that's been a problem.
In the meantime, with society largely opening up, they are free to go to their local pharmacy for butt hurt cream.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just...
Yeah. Like all the 2K games took their servers offline for 2 hours.
Yeah.
Which, great for that community, those communities. Because they were very angry over not being able to play their games for 2 hours.
Yeah, I'm not sure that really helps in any way.
And then But I think NBA 2K added Black Lives Matters and I Can't Breathe shirts for people to get for free.
Okay. That's
not
so they're the slightest. Partner with the NBA.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right. So good on them. This one was going to be the last story, but some other stuff was added. A remaster of Kingdoms of Amalur: Reckoning kind of inadvertently found its way onto the Microsoft Store. Oops.
Well, yeah. There had actually been rumors that this had been happening, that this was being worked on the past few months, and this just kind of confirmed it.
Yeah. So, this is a...
And then they just revealed it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, it's not really a leak anymore. It's like, yeah, okay, this is happening.
Yeah. Go ahead and
it's
rewrite
it. It's not a leak, it's an unintentional announcement.
Yeah. Good, too. When you do get a chance to play it, because it's a really good game.
Yeah.
It's a shame that, it ended up being led and produced by, a grossly incompetent piece of shit, yes.
Yes.
And now it's published by THQ Nordic.
Who did an AMA on 8chan? Well,
yeah,
we're not going to forget that. So
also piece of shit behavior.
Yeah,
yeah.
So make of that what you will. Whether you want to support it or not, we're not going to, point you in one way or the other. But it exists.
My question is: do the original developers, not the owners, but the original developers, benefit from this? Because they're the ones who got screwed over.
Nope, of course not.
No, because Rhode Island, the state of Rhode Island, took over all the assets.
Yeah.
Licenses for that stuff.
Yeah.
Yep.
So they sold that off to THQ Nordic, I think, last year. And then this is the first step of whatever they're doing with that.
Yeah. Okay, possibly a sequel. So, you know, if it could be that the original developers get brought in for a sequel. So it
that would be good.
Yeah, it might end up.
That might be
a
best case scenario.
Yeah. Ari Salvatore did the, you know, wrote the storyline, and, well, he's always looking for work, so.
Yeah.
And, you know, Todd McFarlane was the art director, and, well, he's not really doing anything right now.
Yeah. So. So there we are with that. It's coming out later this summer, so.
Mm-hmm.
And next up, EA has kind of detailed their anti-racism plans.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for their sports games, especially the NHL series.
Oh, yeah. Which is, tweeted about that earlier.
Yeah, which has covers a sport that is predominantly white.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, when they do get black players in there, I imagine their experience is not the greatest.
Yeah, that's actually part of the cultural narrative in hockey right now.
The EASHL stuff, you know, you create your own teams, uniforms, all that stuff. And, yeah, people have taken advantage of not great filtering systems to create a lot of racist names for players and teams that get around their whatever filters they have. And so they're
Sign on without seeing some bullshit.
Yeah, they've put out a plan here saying that they've been actively reviewing their term list to ensure their filter set is comprehensive and accounts for various languages, dialects, and slang. Some they'll review and expand upon regularly. They're adding more tools in games, increase the reporting functionality to make it easier, more seamless for players to report toxic behavior as it occurs, for our teams to remove the content and offenders. Do the high volume of toxic behavior within some of our games. They've increased the frequency of reviewing offenses with the goal of acting more quickly to remove it from their games, and looking to add more fully dedicated resources to their teams to help tackle the issue. The NHL team also posted their own thing here, saying that they're taking immediate steps to address the problem of bigotry and racism on their platforms, delivering harsher penalties to anyone with offensive content, bolstering the resources to monitor action on more accounts, strengthening their profanity filters, and are in the process of creating new in-game functionality for future titles that will allow players to report and send any abusive material directly to the team. Yeah. But it seems like a pretty good first step.
Yeah. It's kind of a shame that we need it, but that's where we are. So I'm glad they're starting to take it seriously, and if they're putting this measures in place in one game, it's going to filter out to the other ones. So trust me.
Yeah.
Yeah. So finally, we'll end on a positive note, I guess. A couple of announcements from Sega. They've revealed their Game Gear Micro, which is ridiculous and awesome.
Yeah.
Mostly ridiculous.
Yeah, it's about $50 for one of these things. The big issue is that it only has four games in it.
Mm-hmm.
And there are four models to cover the whole slate they have for it. So the black one has Sonic the Hedgehog, Puyo Puyo 2, Outrun, and Royal Stone.
And that's probably the one that most people are going to end up getting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I can imagine. Yellow has Shining Force Gaiden, Shining Force Gaiden 2, Shining Force Final Conflict, and Nezo Puyo Aruru no Ru.
Mine.
And blue has Sonic and Tails, Gunstar Heroes, Sylvan Tail, and Baku Baku Animal.
And then the fourth one is the really interesting one, but the more I thought about it, the more it made sense, because Sega did buy Atlas.
Yeah, the red one has Mega Tensei Gaiden Last Bible, Mega Tensei Gaiden Last Bible Special, the GG Shinobi, and Columns.
So you've got Shinobi, Columns, and a pair of Shin Megami Tensei games.
Yeah. And so, yeah, effectively, if you're looking to buy all of them, it's going to be like $200. They're also going to have a package with all four of them together for about $250 with some extra stuff in that.
Including, I believe, a glass.
Yeah. Which is like, okay, I guess. That's a weird thing. It harkens back to the weird shit that they had for like the Game Boy, which was a big magnifying screen for it.
Yeah.
and lights and all that kind of stuff, but the screen is only 1.15 inches diagonally, which is a little bit more than half of what the Game Boy Micro was, which is already too small.
Alex, so, yeah. They have text-heavy games.
Yeah.
Yeah, on at least one of these.
Shining Force teams. Games, Shin Megami Tensei games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not the greatest idea. It's weird that they have this device that's it's still pretty expensive, but only can hold 4 games. Yeah. They can't get the storage to hold more, or they don't want to use it for that much.
Yeah, or maybe they're leaving room for people to hack it. They're just being
I guess. Covert about yeah. it.
At least they'll look crisp.
But it's like, why don't you just get a PSP or Vita and put all those damn games on it then? That way, much cheaper.
But yeah. That's weird.
It's not announced outside of Japan, really. So
yeah, we're probably not going to get it. But still.
You're going to have to go out of your way to get one of these things or four of these things.
Yeah, well, I'm sure somebody will import it for you if you really want it. Yeah. There's Amazon JP. If it's sold on there, you can get it here. So
yeah.
So
and my Japanese is not good enough for the import of this.
Nope. Yeah, and the other announcement was they revealed their Fog arcade platform, which is
arcade platform.
Now this is worth mentioning specifically because this was the Famitsu rumor that everyone was pissing and shitting themselves over. Oh my god, it's the Dreamcast 2. No, this is what it was.
Yeah,
it's like all the way to like Microsoft's buying Sega. They're just going to call it the Sega Series X or whatever. It's like, what? How stupid are you people?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, they're calling this Fog Gaming, not Cloud Gaming. I guess it's supposedly different in some way.
Yeah, Fog is localized.
Yep. Yeah. But yeah, this
it's kind of revolutionary for arcades.
Yeah, it helps tie in arcade machines to be able to kind of stream games to them. And potentially have access to that stuff maybe at home as well. Which would make sense like in this time when people aren't going to the arcades as much with the lockdowns and all that going on.
Yeah.
It definitely fits within Japan, especially Japan being a very small country. There's not as much distance to cover with networking for that kind of stuff like you would here in the U.S., covering thousands of miles of space for that kind of stuff. So, yeah. It's interesting. It's kind of just enough information. You're like, what? But not enough that you're like, okay, I don't know what the use case is for this just yet.
I want to hear more. I'm very interested in the technology here because, digital distribution for arcades has been around for years.
Yeah.
But, yeah, well, Nessica Live, and there's been a couple
of that.
Services.
Nessica Live is kind of the prime example.
Yeah. So I'm kind of wondering how this would be different than that. Maybe there's a local server and then the games are streamed to the machines that way. A lot of unanswered questions, and I'm intrigued enough to follow up on this.
Sega's we use arcades in Japan as the technical backbone. CPUs and GPUs housed in arcade machines are mentioned specifically. Ultra-low latency is touted. And the commercial idea is to use arcades outside business hours.
Oh, wait a minute. Okay, this sounds very different than what I originally thought. This kind of sounds like it's the reverse. Rather than streaming to, it's streaming from.
Yeah.
That would be interesting for home players to be able to stream from the arcade.
Mm-hmm.
Or to your phone.
Especially right now.
Yeah. So, yeah.
You can buy Sega tokens to use on the machines.
Yeah. That in itself I don't think is new. I think they've been able to do
that.
So, Yeah, I'm probably going to follow up on this because this is very intriguing to me. I like arcade stuff. It's just technology like that is just fascinating.
Yeah, kind of weird that this got touted as like, oh, is the scoop on the level of the PS5 reveal and Wired?
Yeah.
Kind of thing. It's like that is a very different, I don't know what it was like in Japan for Famitsu looking at this, for the person there that was mentioning this stuff, but it's like, okay, this, you got people thinking completely different than what this actually is.
Yeah.
Might be because arcades are that big still in Japan.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
They are.
But,
and they're hurting right now because nobody can go.
Yeah.
So, of course, yeah, the solution is an entirely new infrastructure. I'm not entirely sure how effective that's going to be, but we'll see. But, yeah. So I guess that's gonna wrap it up for this week. Bit of a slow week, but we got through it. So if you haven't subscribed to the show, be sure you do that at anchor.fm/dayzerounpdate. You can hit the subscribe button and get the show delivered directly to your device. You can also check us out at smashpad.com. Yeah, we have text stuff there that you can read with your eyeballs. So for Patrick Mifflin, Brandon Perkins, Chris Elogi, and Dan Rip Victorio, I have been Filippo Dernolfo, and we'll see you next week.